This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Nice to be with you. You can text us on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. And yes, repeating what Voice Guy said there, Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Big thank you to both of them for sending us here this week. It's been a fantastic week. Hopefully you've gotten a lot of good coverage of the Astros out of it. We're not done yet. We're going to be out there today, so keep following. Keep listening all day long. We'll be checking in with the midday and afternoon shows, just as we've been doing all week long here on Sports Radio 610. Here was Nick Caserio at the Combine. This is a sit-down he had with Mike Florio and Chris Sims on Pro Football Talk, talking about C.J. Stroud's offseason. Take a listen.
He was very public in media appearances in the offseason last year. Is there a point where do you have a talk with him about that?
You know, I think players kind of have to learn some of this as you go.
Right.
And you got to understand, these are young players and they come in the league and sometimes a lot is thrown at them. And they have to, look, in the end, you got to figure things out on your own. What works, what doesn't work, a little bit more of this, a little bit less of that. But ultimately, whomever the player is, the focus has to be on work and improvement in the offseason. And you can make a lot of progress and a lot of gains if that's where the focus is.
Saw a lot of people reading into that one yesterday.
That's a tough one, yeah, because he's speaking in generalities and saying something that's true for everybody.
A little more of this, a little less of that.
He didn't have the He didn't take the opportunity to specifically say, yeah, CJ worked really hard and was focused and just needs to keep building on that, I suppose.
And by the same token, he also didn't say he did too many podcasts.
No, he did too much
of this. He did too much of that. I have to believe that both D'Amico, we'll hear from D'Amico on this in just a second. He did an interview with Cameron Wolf of the NFL Network. I have to imagine that D'Amico and Nick both highly approve of the way CJ has been going about his offseason so far.
Yeah, and it's always dicey because it's not like doing an interview takes a whole bunch of energy or time or anything. But I think in terms of the whirlwind of attention that CJ got last year, it's hard to balance all of that. And it was, you know, he's off at the White's party in the Hamptons and doing all of these other things that they're kind of mind-blowing for a young man where you're meeting all these celebrities that you've looked up to your whole life. And to try to find the balance where you can maintain your focus and do everything that a quarterback needs to be able to do in the offseason, it's hard to do. And I think some of it's to be expected, and I think that CJ, just by virtue of the way he talked about it at the end of the year, you know, where he said he didn't know what he didn't know. Like, he thought he knew what it took to be a franchise quarterback, but he really didn't know and understand, and now he gets it. So he's gonna work. Now he knows what the challenge is and that there's a balance you have to find, and how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, I think it's more, to me, his offseason last year, Seth, was more – it was less about him actually doing the podcast and the interviews and more so about maybe some of the things he was saying and the way he was carrying himself. And not that he was saying things that were, like, divisive or anything like that, but there were a few, like the one where he put himself third among quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah.
There were a lot of things you could pull from those interviews where if you were a longtime quarterback or you were a coach, you're like, this kid, he may have a comeuppance here coming
well,
soon.
Well, and I think part of it, too, is that with CJ, it does matter, and it's a good thing that he was kind of an underdog, that he wasn't highly recruited. So all of this adulation is kind of new to him. It's not something that he'd gotten a bunch of early in his career and that he had to learn how to handle. And there's some of that, like him ranking himself third on that power ranking, it doesn't feel true to who CJ, I think, is and who he thinks he is. So it almost, some of that stuff felt kind of forced. So I think that, and he alluded to that at the end of the year too, just kind of getting back into his relationship with God and all of these other things that I think are really the core of what he wants to be. I think he just had to, kind of go out there into the wild a little bit and test his boundaries.
Yep.
You know?
And now he's been basically invisible this offseason. No radio row.
Yeah, and I don't think, like, when he put himself third, I honestly didn't feel like, I don't feel like that's CJ. I almost feel like that's when you're trying to, you know, people are telling you to have confidence and be this way and be that way, so you start portraying an image of what you think a confident, cocky dude is. There's some quarterbacks that, like, if they rank themselves third, that guy's cocky, he's bragging, like, and that's just who he is, and it doesn't hurt him at all. I just don't. This year, if CJ's asked that question, he's like, well, okay, I'm not going to put, I think he'll say something like, well, look, I'm not going to, A, what I always advise athletes to do is never do a power ranking question, ever. Ever. It's just
easy. That's why you're a terrible person.
Easy fodder for all these clowns like us, you know? Second, it's hard to do an accurate power ranking in the spur of the moment.
That's what makes it even better.
So, right. So you're not going to give even what you think your accurate power ranking is.
Right.
And third, you never have to power rank yourself. Never power rank
yourself. Now, again, I would say just go ahead and do everything.
Yeah.
But of all the things, I would say, like, yeah, go ahead and do it, but just say, like, I'm not going to put myself. Who did that? Somebody. It might have been Hopkins. Anyways, yes. Don't put yourself in there. That's a compromise I'll make.
Yeah,
you still must do power rankings, but if you need to not put yourself in there, I get it. I'll be okay with that. Okay with it, not great with it. Okay with it.
I've never been able to vote for myself for anything, even like when it's a secret ballot for like just student council president, team captain, anything like that. I've never actually voted for myself.
Oh, really?
I always felt weird. I was always nervous that if I was ever in the position for voting for president. You know, when you go up and you cast your ballots, I'd be like, gosh, I can't go against the party line, but I also feel weird about voting for myself.
That'd be funny if you're running for president and you voted for the other guy. Here's
one. I feel like CJ's a guy that wouldn't vote for himself.
He might not. Here's D'Amico Ryans. He did an interview with Cameron Wolf of the NFL Network, and I think in some ways maybe echoing what Nick Caserio just said.
CJ he has to take a step back, right, and really dive into the off season, right? And that's where your season is won. Like, how are you putting that work into in the off season? Like, how are you hitting the weight room? Like, how are you detailing your craft and improving that and bringing other guys along with you? And I think CJ is going to be much better. He's going to have a much better off season this time around. He's invested into being great. Mm-hmm. And you have a player who has that mindset to be great. We've seen his capabilities. We've seen the throws he's made all up and down the field. Any throw, any play we need to make him, utilizing his legs to make play. Like, he's more than talented, right, to lead our team to that next step. Just continue to get those other guys around him to play the same way.
Okay, the first 25 seconds or so of that cut are, to me, much more direct than what Nick Caserio said in the previous cut.
Right. Well, he said much better.
Literally,
you know,
said better offseason.
Much better this offseason. He's committed to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you go into that whole learning what it really takes to be I was worried that those guys didn't realize that they weren't actually a good offense last year in 2023. Like, they were a promising offense, but they weren't actually a good offense.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like everybody was operating like, oh yeah, the Texans offense, they're good and now they're going to be better. Like, no, they hadn't even established that they were an actually good offense in 2023. And CJ learned exactly what happens when teams have studied you the entire offseason. That
Caserio from the combine, we talked a little bit about this yesterday. Caserio, this is on McAfee, on evaluating players for DeMeco. Kind of Nick's been steeped in the New England way for 20 years, and now here he comes to Houston, and now in comes DeMeco Ryans, and he's scouting out players.
I think the big thing, too, systematically, like defensively, like that system, this system is different than how I was trained. So how you evaluate players, what's important, what you prioritize. So you have to maintain an open mind as you're piecing that team together. But I think the traits and characteristics and profile of the player, of what you want in the person when they walk in the building, that's remained consistent. So you have to have a certain level of discipline. You have to be committed to that. If you prioritize and say, this is important, their competitiveness, are they a good teammate? Do they put the team first? They have mental and physical toughness. If you say those things are important, who are the players that have those qualities? Like, that's our job and responsibility, and you have to stay true to that. If you start to veer off, well, these are important, but you know what? This guy ran 4-1 and he's not a good kid. All right, well, are you really staying true to what you believe in? So I think philosophically, DeMeco and I are aligned in that respect.
Yeah, it was interesting. The first part, you and I had a hard time hearing the first part of that cut, Seth, with Nick. He was talking about just he was scouting for a certain scheme for 20 years. Yeah. And now DeMeco obviously doesn't run the same stuff Belichick runs. But here they've arrived at this, DeMeco and Nick, where it almost sounds like it's more important that we find the right kind of guy.
Yeah.
And then we'll find a way to make him fit in.
Well, okay, so I was thinking about this morning, and I think game plan offense sounds great, and people talk about, all right, maybe with Nick Haley, he's going to be a little bit more of from week to week. You don't have to be this type of offense. You don't have to be an outside zone run offense. You don't have to be a power offense. I think really what I care more about is what I've heard from these guys when it comes to adapting the scheme to your players. And I think that's where the good offensive coordinators and the good teams anymore, because of free agency and then because of injuries and because of everything else and the way football has changed, is that it's, if you start thinking you're going to have a master plan for, we're going to have these types of players that have this skill set and then this is the offense we're going to run, you're going to run into roadblocks along the way. So you got to be able to adapt your scheme to what types of guys you have, what types of athletes you have. But the one common variable is that if you've got guys that are just really good football character guys,
love football,
then you're going to be able to adapt that scheme a lot easier. If you got guys that have adaptability as players, if they have the personalities that have that swarm mindset, then that matters a lot. Yeah. And I think that, yeah, the type of guy, and obviously you want playmakers and you want guys that have extreme skills in some level. But yeah, okay, if you happen to have more fast wide receivers than big wide receivers, you're going to adapt the scheme to that, as long as they've all got that swarm mentality.
Yeah, it was interesting. So that was Casario's side of the DeMeco Casario dynamic from the McAfee show. DeMeco did his sit down with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer, and this was kind of fun because this is the same concept, but this is DeMeco's view of it.
When you look at building a team, it goes to, you know, when I first started out, we had scouts and we had probably different schemes and guys were looking for different things.
Right.
You know, there may have been things that were more important to other staffs that weren't so important to me. So I just love how, you know, Nick and Lipford and the scouting staff, it's kind of, I see the language shifting in how we're talking about players.
Right.
Wow. Right. I see like that common language amongst how we coach our players, what we're asking them to do. I start to see that show up in their reports and how they talk about player, or, hey, this is a swarm player, or this isn't a DeMeco guy, or this, and you start to see that, and it's like, oh, man, they understand, like, what we're looking for. So it's so much easier now to know the type of players we want know who to, hey, we probably need to stay away from this guy at this point in time. He's not the guy for us.
Right.
So just seeing that come together so quickly, that's been the cool part about the team building. It's just such a more smooth transition, I would say, this year.
Right.
Just seeing in the interviews and everything, like, it's just, this guy's done an unbelievable job of just picking up the speed on how I talk, how I communicate to guys and guys I'm looking for.
That's really fun playing those cuts back-to-back because it's Casario on a completely different platform with McAfee talking about his view of it, and it's DeMeco talking about it on a completely different platform with Texans Radio, and it almost feels like those two cuts like are running alongside each other and meet at some point, you know, like where they – like you. They are in lockstep on the types of guys they're looking for.
And that was one of the things that Belichick's philosophy was always – that you had to be sure your scouts and your coaches were speaking the same vocabulary and that they, what agility means to one person might mean something completely different to somebody else. So you got to be sure that when you're using your vocabulary that you've got the same meanings for everything. And some of that you can write down, but some of it's just got to come from working with people. When D'Amico talks about that, what I like and hope for is that forever people in the scouting community have been able to say, oh, that player is a Ravens type of player. Or, nope, that guy's a Steeler. Like, those two teams especially, that it just feels like they go after a certain type of player. And those two teams, I think they're kind of similar types of players. But that among scouts, they'll even say, like, no, but there's a difference between a Ravens player and a Steelers player. That's why I think the Ravens feel so comfortable genuinely going for best player available and not caring about who the starters on their team are or anything, because they know that if they just follow their process and they keep getting their types of guys in the building, that you're going to have a bunch of good football players on your team. Don't try to overthink it.
Yeah.
And you can do that when you feel really confident in your scouting process.
That's one of those things that transcends the coach. You know, like you say that about Ravens players, and you said that before John Harbaugh was there. You said it when Brian Billick was there.
It really is Ozzie Newsome.
Ozzie Newsome is the GM.
He's
a common threat.
It's kind of Ozzie Newsome that I think probably also was really good at working with Harbaugh or Billick, but also just in those guys coming aligned to whatever a Ravens player was too.
Yeah. Yeah, and obviously you got to win at a high level. Like once they win the Texans at a high level, it'll go from being this is a D'Amico guy to this is a Texan.
Right.
You know? Yeah. That's the sweet nectar, man. That's where you want to get. Here was Nick Caserio. This is him. We're going back now to Pro Football Talk with Chris Sims and Mike Florio on the firing of Bobby Slowick.
Bobby did a lot of really great things for the organization, helped a number of players. I think as we went through it, D'Amico felt in the end that that was the right thing for our team. So it wasn't easy. I mean, D'Amico and Bobby essentially grew up in the NFL together. So to be able to make a decision like that was hard. It was taxing. So, but, you know, that was a decision we felt made the most sense for us. So we got to turn the page. So, I mean, it's a good opportunity for Nick. Has experience kind of a multitude of systems. So we'll kind of see how it goes. But, you know, Nick's highly respected coach in this league. So, again, it's going to be a collective effort. It's not going to be specifically about Nick Haley. It's going to be about the offensive staff, the offensive players, how we play, how do we handle things in game. So all of it kind of fits together in the end.
My one wish, if I could just have one wish for the offense as far as something that gets improved, there's a lot of things. But my one wish, just based on what sounds like, and we'll see with Kaylee, like so far of all the things we're hearing, if it's the truth that we're hearing about him, that he's hyper-focused on fundamentals, spent a lot of time with Dante Scarnecchia when he was in New England, that kind of thing, that it seems like he'd be more dialed in on the offensive line stuff than Bobby Slowick was. This, my one reasonable wish is that we don't have any more, we minimize at least, the plays by the offensive line where we're like, what the hell is this guy doing on this play?
Yeah.
What are they doing? Like, where they just look completely uneducated.
Yeah,
or
just you've got one guy doing something completely different than the other four guys.
Yeah. So,
well, the biggest, some of the times where you had both an offensive tackle and a running back blocking an interior defensive line while the defensive end ran free. Yeah.
I can deal with guys getting beat on occasion physically. You get whooped, guy's better than you. Yeah. He beats you to the corner, whatever the case may be. But just the stuff that is just such romper room, Keystone Cop stuff. Like, get rid of that. Get rid of that stuff. And that's a big step. That would be my one reasonable wish among many wishes that I have. I've got several for the offense.
Just clean it up.
Clean it up.
Yeah, just like, give me a clean operation.
Clean it up.
Don't because it wasn't just Laramie when it came to, in the first half of the season, the pre-snap penalties. It was the entire operation, and then all season long. The one big thing that I think, that I know a lot of people have been thirsty for, is that the level of command that CJ has at the line of scrimmage in the modern NFL, you're just way better off if your quarterback is really dictating pass protection and all of that. And it takes – you can only expect a young quarterback to do so much. But, I mean, he's just got a better vantage point than the center.
Yeah.
He can just see things. And if he and he should be able to, as he gets to that level, be able to identify who the actual blitzer is, what are the tells on that defense, all that kind of stuff. And it just didn't feel like there was any urgency to try to help CJ out in that regard at all. I mean, Bobby Slowick specifically said that they don't worry a lot or work a lot on diagnosing things pre-snap. And I just – that's one thing if you're just working with a younger quarterback, But they weren't even given the opportunity to learn how to do it because of the operation where they're getting up to the line of scrimmage with only a few seconds left on the play clock. So you don't expect a third-year quarterback to be out there directing traffic like Tom Brady in his prime, but I want to see him working towards that.
Yeah. There are odds out right now, Seth, on where some of these guys who've requested trades may end up. Jonathan Allen, Houston Texans, tied for third on the odds board for defensive tackle.
It makes
Jonathan
sense.
Allen.
Yeah. No, and look, we know already from going back 2 years ago when DeMeco was trying to get from the 49ers the defensive tackle,
Eric Armstead.
They were trying to get Eric Armstead in here, and they weren't able to. And they got guys that could fill the role, but they weren't necessarily difference makers at defensive tackle in Mario Edwards and Foley Fatakasi. So either through free agency or through the draft, I'd expect DeMeco, who calls the defensive line the engine of the defense, he's always going to be trying to add to the defensive line. And right now it doesn't make sense. You've already spent a lot of resources on the edge rushers. The interior defensive line this year, they didn't address it really last year because it didn't work out with Eric Armstead. I would expect him to do it this year.
You'd be getting a motivated guy, I would imagine.
Yeah.
He's in the last year of his deal. He signed a big deal. He's making $15 million this year. It's the Lions, number one, at 3-1 on the odds board. Chicago Bears, 5-1. And then the Chargers and the Texans are 7-1.
And I had seen a report yesterday afternoon, but I couldn't track down the initial source. It was a Texans aggregator that said, I can't remember, that Danielle Hunter is looking for an extension this offseason.
Oh, I didn't see that.
But I didn't see it from the primary news source, and he didn't link it. So let's just speak about it hypothetically. If Danielle Hunter wants an extension.
Yes.
I would happily give it to him, and it could be part of also creating cap space for all this other stuff. I'm almost expecting them to do something with Danielle Hunter's contract.
Yeah, I think it's a win-win.
He was 100% healthy, played really well. He likes it here. They love him, and he's still very healthy. So, he's getting up there in years, but he's still, I think, in his prime. So I think that works out for both parties. Danielle, I mean, you can extend him, have him for a year or two more, but also you can get some salary cap relief this
year. Yeah, two more years. Yeah, because he's in the last year of his deal, so he's $24 million or whatever it is. I don't know. Maybe they did some void years with him. Yeah, I don't know. But I would be all for that. I didn't see that yesterday. So, yeah, I'll keep an eye out for that. Getting some text messages here on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Going back to the story of your brother taking you up to the top of the double diamond slopes.
When I had never skied before.
Never skied before. For those of you who never skied, I don't know if there's an analogy. This getting dropped off in the double diamond slopes is like never having driven before, and you're getting dropped off in the middle of the Indy 500.
It's like going cliff diving for your first time diving.
Yeah.
It's like, get on one knee and put your hands over your head and dip. That's what it feels like. It looks like you're standing at the top of a cliff. Those things are so steep, and there's moguls all over them.
Yep.
And they're narrow. Yeah.
Text message. I bet Seth's brother looks back now and is proud. He probably thinks he had a big hand in the man that Seth has become.
He probably does. He's like, yep, that was character building for him.
He probably does, and Seth is not happy about it.
No, I think he doesn't. He doesn't look back at all.
That's funny.
He doesn't. He just doesn't. You know, the oldest child, just generally, if they're that kind of an oldest child, they have the best version of every memory.
Oh, yes. Man, that's pretty.
That guy nailed it. Now, I think he's probably right.
Dan, I'm the oldest, and I never took my brothers up to a double diamond moguls.
Oof. They used to, man.
You've had some stories, brother.
They used to. One time we drove to Myrtle Beach in the back of my dad's Ranger pickup.
Yeah,
like we rode in the back. We had a cap on it. You know, and it was hot. We were going down for our high school spring break, and my brother and stepbrother just decided to put me in one of the sleeping bags and trap me in it to see how long I could last.
A sleeping bag? Like, zipped it up?
Yeah, like in a heavy-duty, like, sleeping bag, like one of those really big, thick ones. It was awful. Like, that was my life every day. I got just absolutely terrorized.
You got bullied in your own house.
Yeah, I was terrified all the time.
That's awful. Oh my god. Let's see. Didn't we hear all this same crap from Bill O'Brien? Game plan, offense, blah blah blah.
Yeah, I've pointed that out before. I've pointed that out before. The irony of going from a Kubiak Shanahan style scheme to Bill O'Brien game plan offense. Yes, and this is the whole thing about the scheme stuff. That's why I don't care about game plan offense. I care about good offense. Because there's a thousand different ways to skin a cat. My brother tried all of them on me. And we don't know. We don't know if Nick Haley's going to be a good offensive coordinator or not. We just flat out don't know.
Yeah.
But if it does work out, this is what it'll look like.
I think it's an indicator of just how frustrating the offense got under Bobby Slowik, that we've actually gotten very little of that text since Kaylee became the offensive coordinator. He was very open about being a game plan offense in that introductory press conference. And every
people
time
people were really excited about it because Kubiak's scheme, they don't tend to adjust a lot from week to week.
I was, every time he was saying it, though, I was like ducking. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I thought a lot of people.
I thought there'd be a lot of O'Brien PTSD.
Yeah, I've brought it up way more than people have brought it up to me.
Right.
And, yeah, I think it is. People just have that appetite for it that they don't. And it's neither great nor bad. It all boils down to, all right, this is great, and you can kind of see what they want to do. But until he goes out and does it, you just have no idea. We've never seen him as an offensive coordinator.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's check in on a couple places around the AFC South. The Jags, man, this Gladstone guy, we'll get to him in a second. This was Tony Boselli, the new executive vice president of football operations in Jacksonville, former Texan, but much kind of, much better known as a former Jag, Hall of Famer. He was smitten. It was love at first sight with Liam Cohen.
Now, I'll never forget, Liam walked in, and within 30 minutes, I'm like, this is the guy. This is the guy for the job. He needs to be our next head coach. And the way I look at it is, the tape is his resume as a football coach. I don't need to know whether Liam Cohen can coach football or not. I mean, just turn on the tape. Look what he's done, whether it was at the Rams, the Kentucky Wildcats, or at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The dude knows how to coach offensive football. And so what I wanted to know, what kind of guy is he? And could I project him being the leader of the whole building? Because in our model, the head coach is the voice of the football organization. He's going to set the culture. He's going to coach those players. He's going to manage his coaching staff. And he's going to lead us to victory on the football field. So it's not just being a great offensive coordinator, but can he be a great leader? And it just jumped off the page that he was that type of guy.
Duval.
I knew it, Ben. All right. Good job.
I don't know. Tony kind of sold me on Liam Cohen.
Well, you actually said that – I mean, we had fun with the Duval, and we will continue to have fun with the Duval hotkey.
Duval.
But you said that – I mean, you watched the whole press conference
was pretty good.
You can see what Boselli is saying there, level?
Yeah, because he had a way of, you know, all these guys get up and there's going to be certain buzzwords and everything and they're trying to lay out their philosophies.
We're about to hear some.
Yeah, I think that, with him it didn't feel like he had just taken notes from whatever book he was reading that morning and slap them into a speech.
Yeah.
He sounded and felt like a guy that's been around football a long time, and a lot of his philosophies that you might read in a book or something somewhere, it's ingrained in him working with players. So I do think there's a youthful vibe to him, but also a relatability that rings true. So I was impressed with his press conference.
What's your concern level as a Texan fan that he is the guy Boselli is describing there on a scale of 1 to 10?
5.
So 50-50 you are. Coin flip. Yeah.
I guess since I was impressed with him at his press conference, maybe I'll up it to a 6. I look at these coaching hires the same way I look at these kids at the combine. They all suck until they don't.
Yeah.
I'm not impressed with any of them until they actually get in. Yeah.
Start with an F.
Prove that you can actually play football or coach football as a head coach, and then we'll worry about it. But I just don't – I don't think it was an abomination of a press conference. And I think people are kind of – I think they're misled by his youthful look.
Yeah.
When I started to listen to him speak, he sounded more like an actual football coach.
Yeah. All right, so here's James Gladstone doing one of several interviews at the Combine this week.
So James Gladstone is the new general manager of the Jacksonville
Jaguars.
You've gone down such a Gladstone wormhole that I don't think you realize that almost nobody knows who Gladstone is.
I was going to say who he was.
Okay, well, you've mentioned him a few times where you have and I'm just talking, because I do the same thing. You've been obsessed with Gladstone. I'm telling the listeners how obsessed Sean has been with Gladstone. We'll be driving to Port St. Lucie yesterday, and out of the back seat, I just hear like, this guy, this bleeping guy.
I hate this guy.
I'm like, what, Sean? Gladstone.
So here's James Gladstone, GM of the Jags, with more annoying buzzword talk.
I think I view it as a key strength because, really, you know, I have
hang on, Ben. Pause. I should have set that up better. Seth set me off. He was asked if his age is a detriment or is it an asset. He's only 34 years old, for those who don't know.
I think I view it as a key strength because, really, you know, I have a fresh perspective, and I think that's also the case for both Liam and Tony. And through my own experiences, I feel like I have a deep understanding of really the tools and modern mechanisms that are revolutionizing the sport. And so I don't ever view the number of years that I've had on planet Earth as a limitation, but, you know, just my preferred way of moving is one that I think can bring a dynamic asset and an edge over the competition.
I'm like, oh, there's only 3 seconds left. He won't annoy me in these 3 seconds. And he drops dynamic assets.
He's already learned how to not actually answer a question.
Oh,
so his age is a strength. And I guess what he's alluding to is that because he understands the – what type of mechanisms are they?
They're revolutionizing.
Modern mechanisms?
They're revolutionizing the sport.
Revolutionizing the sport. I mean, maybe he's saying that because he's younger, he's open to those and understands them in a way that the olds don't.
Shot Khan is – I'm easily sold to.
Yeah.
Shot Khan is way more easily sold to than I am.
Yeah.
That he let Trent Baalke snow him for that many years, and then he has this guy come in and just pepper him with 13-letter words and makes him the GM.
He's got a dynamic it's one of his dynamic assets. Is that what he said?
The end. He said, yeah.
I couldn't read my old man handwriting.
Dynamic
asset. Sorry, Gladstone.
Yeah.
I don't understand these modern mechanisms.
Yeah. You're a dinosaur. Your handwriting. Oh, God. He's
acting like 45-year-olds don't know how to use a computer.
Dude, yeah, that's what he is.
I know how to. I can use my smartphone much more adeptly.
I would love to know what the other GMs think of Gladstone, if they agree with me on it. Look, I'm all for using the new tools and analytics and stuff. I'm definitely not somebody who's like, got to do it the old way. Let's see what this guy's moxie is like, my gut ranking on this guy.
I remember we used to – Dan Riley was the original strength coach with the Texans, and he was awesome. And he was legendary in a lot of ways because he was one of the very first full-time strength coaches in the NFL and in college in Division I football as well back at West Point when he started out.
He was with the Redskins, right?
Yeah. He was with them through their Super Bowl runs and everything.
Yeah.
So he had visitors all the time. People would want to come in and learn his methods and everything. And every now and then you'd get some guy that was coming in and he'd be asking questions and he would start saying things like instead of just saying, like, where should the arm be, he should be like, well, what is the placement of the humerus on this exercise? Riley, he would lose it. he'd be polite, but you could just see him like, this son of a bitch.
So what do you think he'd think of Gladstone?
If he started using, like, the specific proper and anatomical terms for everything.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Let's check.
I don't think he'd like it. I don't know. I'll have to ask Dan. Dan listens to our show, so he might be listening right now. He'll text me if he is.
Okay.
What he thought?
He thinks of Gladstone.
Dan's one of the realest guys alive.
Yeah, I'm guessing he's not a Gladstone guy.
No.
Yeah. All right, one more from the AFC South. The Colts are going to have a quarterback competition. How about this?
Yay!
I thought Anthony Richardson was picked two picks after C.J. Stroud. I thought he was the anointed one. Here was Chris Ballard yesterday. Indianapolis Colts. I don't know if it was yesterday. It was earlier this week at the Combine. Chris Ballard, the GM of the Indianapolis Colts, there's going to be a QB competition in Indianapolis.
Look, it's got to be the right guy to create real competition, but we want to create real competition. I think it's good for the team. I think it's good for Anthony. When we drafted Anthony High knowing it was going to take some time, all right? And we knew there's going to be some hiccups along the way. And It's you know, I know we all want a finished product right now. I do, you do, fans do, we all do. But I think as he continues to progress in his young career, us adding competition, I think will help up everybody's game.
Yeah.
This is not where you want to be heading into year three with a top five drafting.
No, and look, I think I saw a lot of people yesterday say, whatever, that's bogus, because if Anthony Richardson doesn't start, then Ballard's losing his job. I could see Ballard very clearly thinking, no, this guy genuinely needs competition. If he doesn't get this competition, then he's not going to develop and I'm going to lose my job.
Yes.
The way everybody in Indianapolis, including the veteran offensive lineman and Chris Ballard himself and others, have talked about Anthony Richardson was that he was extremely immature. And not in a jerk way. Not in the way where he was treating people poorly or anything like that. It's just like he just flat
sloppy.
Out didn't get it. It still bothers me that it's not being reported this way. When people talk about him being tapping out of that game, they need to understand that it was third and goal.
Yeah.
In a game in which they were trailing by a touchdown in the second half.
Against your division rival.
It wasn't just a random play where maybe, for one, quarterbacks just don't tap out because they need a blow. But even then, it was a very specific situation where you would never tap out like that. And then when they talk about doing things like taking notes in meetings or just caring about doing all the things that every quarterback should do, he just sounded like he was way out of his element.
Yeah.
Ballard keeps talking about it like they knew it was going to be a 2 or 3 year deal. And I'm willing to listen to him because I could totally see Irsay. I mean, I think Irsay was the one that came out and said Richardson was going to start immediately.
Yeah.
That it's so owner driven here. I mean, Ballard might want to get fired by now. The way that Irsay's been operating the last couple years, it's probably not a whole lot of fun.
I think he'd get another GM job fairly quickly.
Yeah,
Ballard would. Like I don't know. I know they haven't done anything in Indianapolis of substance. They've won one playoff game in the 7 years he's there.
But they haven't. It's one of those things where it's because they haven't found a quarterback. But at the same time, all right, you're the GM. Go find a quarterback.
Right.
That's the double-sided sword there. But otherwise, he's put together really good rosters.
Yeah.
And I think they've done some really good things. They're a competitive football team without having an actual solution at quarterback.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you live in West Palm Beach. Again, thanks to Exclusive Furniture, Academy Sports and Outdoors for sending us here. Our last few hours here in West Palm Beach, we'll be headed out to the yard today to go watch Jose Altuve play a little left field for the first time for the Houston Astros. We'll keep you up to speed on all that throughout the day here on Sports Radio 610. Up next, mock draft injection time. Luke Easterling of Athlon.com. This is a three-rounder. I don't know if we'll hit all three rounds. But there's the Texans make a move that I like in this mock draft. And we'll take a look around the AFC South in this one as well. We'll do that coming up next.